So I appreciate you coming out tonight on such a nice night. And we were kind of joking just before we got here that we hoped everyone was out being physically active. So, all right. So physical inactivity. This is something that I've studied for several years, 14 years from the time I received my doctorate, teaching classes in different places. So physical inactivity is such an important part of our daily life. In this lecture, I'd like to give a history of the guidelines on physical activity and how those guidelines have evolved over time. I'd also like to talk about current recommendations for physical activity. So the recent government consensus on physical activity just came out in December 2018. And that provides a basis for our daily life and being active to produce health benefits. Sometimes I think we have to train like a world-class athlete to have health-related benefits from activity, and that's simply not true. So exercising for good health and exercising for performance are two different things. So it's important to make that distinction. We'll talk about some of the mechanisms of physical activity and promoting good health, and then the impact of physical inactivity on the public health burden. When I think about physical activity, I think about the joy and happiness that comes from being able to move. Our bodies were designed to move. Our bodies are built to move. And we change. Our bodies change in response to movement. We might not appreciate what a privilege it is to move until that goes away. And we become immobilized for one reason or another, and our bodies begin to regress rapidly once our ability to move is gone. So there's a clear connection between being able to move sufficiently and having good health and avoiding a lot of the common diseases that are present in our society today. So our quality of life, living longer, is connected with moving sufficiently on a daily basis. So think about that. Maybe, you know, what my mom always told me, you know, eat your fruits and vegetables and go outside and play. Really simple advice, but it's so important to follow that advice, the quality of food that we eat and how much we move on a daily basis. Physical activity is connected with many dimensions of our lives. Successful aging is highly dependent on physical activity, as well as other things. So we'll talk about the physical activity part tonight. A lot of companies have made policies specifically directed for employees to be more physically active because they know that they have happier employees and it saves them money over time. If you look back at 1900, the major causes of death in 1900 are very different versus today. So this data was collected in 2010. We don't have recent data. But if you look at the difference in causes of death 120 years ago versus today, and then maybe you can start to hypothesize what's changed in how people live. So if we look at today, okay, heart disease, cancer, non-infectious airway diseases, and stroke, okay, all those things were not as common back in 1900. So I think there has to be something about our lifestyle. How much we move, or the type of food we're putting in our bodies, or the environment, the type of air we breathe, okay, is much different now than it was back then. So then you start to think, well, how can I prevent some of these things? And so one of my purposes here tonight is to show that physical activity, just simply being active, can help prevent a lot of these things. Not completely, but it can help a lot. So this is interesting from the Milken Institute. For every 10% increase in information communication technology investment, okay, the total obesity rate increases by 1.4%. So then you look at things that have changed and are continuing to change. Physical activity has been engineered out of our daily lifestyle. The way that we eat, people are so busy, it's hard to find a family that just sits down anymore to have a traditional family dinner. People are so busy with their careers, it's a temptation to eat poor quality food, just to grab something quickly on the way home that may not be the most nutritious. I grew up in a small farming community. I had a lot of unstructured playtime. So fishing in the summer twice a day, moving sprinkler pipe, hauling hay. I think about even how sports seasons have changed for kids. Where I was from, it was 6 weeks in the summer and that was it. And now it seems like everything is so structured and year-round, and it just seems like kids need more unstructured playtime to be creative. So I miss just this culture, the family farm, where kids can do work and they can develop their minds. In January 2019, so just a couple months ago, there was two articles, and it was a kind of a friendly scientific debate. I've met both of these gentlemen who are on this side of the debate, and they are staunch proponents of physical activity. The other people are staunch proponents of physical activity too. The debate is it the physical activity or is it the weight reduction that is more important in achieving these health-related benefits? I find that with any debate, the truth is usually somewhere in the middle. Okay? The point that Gazer and Blair made, you can see a quote, is that if you look at an unfit, normal weight individual, their risk of mortality is greater than someone who has more weight but is fit. So you'll see this acronym a lot tonight, CRF. That stands for cardiorespiratory fitness. Cardiorespiratory fitness. So that's a measure of aerobic fitness, so the amount of oxygen that your body can consume. And so there's a connection between that measure of fitness, aerobic fitness, and our health and our risk of developing disease. And so they've published a lot of studies showing that if you are normal weight but not fit, your risk of mortality is higher versus if you're carrying some extra weight but you are fit. So that's very interesting. The other side of the debate is that reducing weight can have a lot of other useful health-related benefits, especially on our joints, low back pain, joint pain, arthritis, balance, mobility, depression. So I can see both sides are important, but what I'd like to focus on tonight is more of the Gasser and Blair stuff. So what have they said? Why, if we increase our physical activity independent of any change in weight, what type of health benefits can we expect? Okay, so here's one of the slides published by Blair showing that in over almost 41,000 men and 13,000 women, low cardiorespiratory fitness accounted for about 16% of all deaths. So if you look at that, that's the most common cause of death when you control for all other factors. Hypertension coming in second. So that's really important, low cardiorespiratory fitness. So our ability to consume oxygen, that aerobic fitness, is so important for good health. Okay, here's another quote by Brer. Regular physical activity will help with weight management, which is important, but the activity will be very important to the patient's health, whether or not they lose the weight. Sometimes I think psychologically people are on some type of nutrition intervention or exercise intervention, and they feel depressed if their body's not responding in that way, if they're not losing weight. So I think that needs to be a secondary focus compared with other things, other health benefits that can be achieved just through the physical activity itself. So I think the focus needs to change, maybe not so much on losing the weight, but just maintaining activity levels, because our health can significantly improve whether or not we lose the weight. If you look, this is a graph showing low, moderate, and high levels of cardiorespiratory fitness, aerobic capacity, across different BMI categories. Now, BMI is good for assessing weight in large groups of people. So people that had a normal BMI, and you notice the mortality rate as cardiorespiratory fitness goes from low to moderate to high. And it's the same relationship for people that would be in this category and this category. So what we can see is, independent of weight, having good cardiorespiratory fitness can have longevity benefits. I want you to take a close look at that graph, because that same relationship comes up over and over and over again with lots of different factors. So you'll see this same relationship a lot. The other thing is, if you look at that graph, the distance between, say, a low level of fitness and a moderate level of fitness is not the same as going from moderate to high. You think about that. Where are you getting the greatest return for your time investment in physical activity? Going from a low level of fitness to a moderate level of fitness is where you get the best benefit. You get the greatest return. All of us can get to this moderate cardiorespiratory fitness category. So you might be asking, well, what's moderate and how do I know if I'm there? I'll talk about specific numbers. So if you ever had your cardiorespiratory fitness measured, exactly where you would need to be to know that you're in the moderate fitness category. Not everybody enjoys exercise. Okay. So some people really like it, which is good. Because if you do a little bit more exercise, you get to this high fitness zone, you get a little bit more benefit. A little bit. But the emphasis in public health is to get people from doing nothing to doing something. Doing something is what can get you to this moderate fitness category. And that's where you're getting most of the benefits. And get this clicker to work. Here we go. All right, so successful aging. Lots of things determine successful aging. Successful aging is dependent on your level of function. So we want to maintain that high level of function as long as we can. So that involves being physically active, as well as other things. Mentally stimulating lifestyle, strong social engagement, finding purpose and meaning in your life, and environments that support that lifestyle. So when my family and I moved here from Illinois 3 years ago, one of the things we love about Montana is the mountains and all the outdoor activities that are available here. So we definitely have a great environment to support a physically active lifestyle here. So research into physical activity and mortality began back in the 1950s. So this study by Morris in 1953 recognized the relationship between activity and mortality. So comparing bus drivers in London, 31,000 London transport workers, drivers versus conductors. So what's the difference in job requirements between a driver versus a conductor? The driver sits and the conductor's up on their feet walking. Okay, so there's something there. Much lower mortality rate in the workers that are up moving consistently. Okay, Hippocrates promoted the exercise as medicine concept. To summarize one of his quotes, speaking of physical activity, it can contribute much to the recovery of the sick and to the preservation of health in case of those gymnastics, athletic exercises. So what about modern history? Let's go to the 1970s. So if any of you remember the 1970s, that was when the jogging craze happened. Jogging. All the benefits of jogging. Mostly due to the increase in cardiorespiratory fitness. So the emphasis was on developing this cardiorespiratory fitness. One fitness characteristic. Okay, so the emphasis is on training to develop CRF, cardiorespiratory fitness. Here's a magazine cover I found online from the 1970s. 1977, celebrities participating in the jogging craze. The public health recommendations at that time were very specific on the type of aerobic exercise to do to develop cardiorespiratory fitness. This is also around the time that Frank Shorter won the gold medal in the marathon in the 1972 Munich Olympics. And then in Montreal in 76, he won the silver. So it was a time when jogging was very popular. So we can see the recommendations, the American Heart Association, the YMCA, and the American College of Sports Medicine to develop cardiorespiratory fitness, working out at a certain percentage of maximal heart rate, MHR, or a certain percentage of VO2 max. So these were very specific recommendations designed to improve cardiorespiratory fitness. Kenneth Cooper came out with the book Aerobics in 1968. Kenneth Cooper coined the term aerobics. I did an internship in the year 2000 at Kenneth Cooper's facility in Dallas, Texas. And I had the opportunity to meet him and see him almost on a daily basis. Back in 1968, he wasn't really sold on the benefits of strength training. But by 2000, he was in lifting weights, and then he also continue to do aerobic training. And we'll talk about the benefits of strength training because some people like exercise, but they don't like aerobic exercise. They like weight training. And we can get lots of benefits from weight training. So if you don't like aerobics, choose something that you enjoy and you still get those longevity benefits. So we have a changing paradigm going on. After the 1970s, things began to change. There was an explosion in research looking at the relationship between physical activity, cardiorespiratory fitness, and different health outcomes. So the quantity and quality of exercise to achieve health-related benefits might be different than just to achieve fitness. So exercising for health versus exercising for fitness might be two different things. So the connection between activity and health. So results from large epidemiological studies showed that most health and longevity benefits are achieved in going from low to moderate levels of cardiorespiratory fitness. So these are two of the top American distance runners right now, Galen Rupp and Shalane Flanagan. And so what the current research is saying is we don't need to train to be like these individuals. Being like these individuals is great, but we don't have to put in that time investment if we want to be healthy and feel better and have all these health-related benefits. So the recommendations through the 80s and 2000 began to change. The American Heart Association in 1992 declared physical inactivity as a major risk factor for heart disease. In 1995 and 96, we had the first physical activity recommendations. So I want you to notice 30 minutes of moderate intensity physical activity, a minimum of 5 days per week. So that amounts to 1.5 miles at a pace of 3 to 4 miles per hour. So think on a treadmill, you could walk 1.5 miles at 3 miles per hour and you'd be fulfilling that requirement. Also want you to see no mention of strength training at this point, which is interesting. So it's still about activity, but we're not bringing in that strength training part of it. 2002, the Institute of Medicine recommended 60 minutes of moderate intensity physical activity daily. A lot of times the public gets confused about the purpose of recommendations. So why is it that one organization says 30 minutes, another organization says 60? Well, they really aren't conflicting. The Institute of Medicine, their intention was to promote a greater volume of exercise. So not only for health, but also for weight management. So just showing the explosion of studies in this area coming all the way to 2005 and still going on today. So the Aerobic Center longitudinal study. This was started at Ken Cooper's Aerobic Center in Dallas, where they followed a large group of people for several years. It's still going on today. Still going on today. Just a little bit about the study. But some major messages from the study. Cardiovascular disease death rates by fitness groups. 7,000 women, 25,000 men. Do you notice that same pattern? With the graph going from low to moderate to high. The same pattern going from being sedentary at a low level to doing something. Getting to that moderate level is the key. Here's something really interesting that came out of the Aerobic Center study. Risk factors, looking at risk factors and also fitness in relation to mortality. So risk factors like currently smoking, high blood pressure, high systolic blood pressure, high blood cholesterol, all those things are risk factors. Looking at the number of risk factors with the level of fitness. So the reference group in this case would be having a high level of fitness with no risk factors. That's your reference right here. I want you to compare a couple of spots here. Zero risk factors with low cardiorespiratory fitness. So having none of these things with low cardiorespiratory fitness versus having two or three of these with a high level of cardiorespiratory fitness. And I want you to look at the comparison, the mortality rate, no risk factors, low fitness, versus two or three risk factors and high fitness. It's about the same. So what does that suggest? That suggests a protective effect of physical activity. Now, I'm not advocating that you go out and start smoking and raise your blood pressure and raise your blood cholesterol. What I'm saying is that physical activity has a protective effect on our health. Okay? So individuals of any size We need to stop thinking so much about body size and start thinking more about health. What health benefits can we achieve by being more active? Okay, so just showing that same relationship in risk, mortality, in fit and unfit groups, regardless of body fat percentage. So we put that aside. We put body fat percentage aside, and we're still significantly reducing mortality in all people of all different sizes. So the emphasis is on being more active and stop worrying so much about your body image. Okay, waist circumference, kind of the same relationship. Low, moderate, high waist circumference. Okay, high in this case would be about 38 inches. Okay, but look, the reduction in mortality risk being physically active, independent of waist circumference, achieving physical fitness has a health protective effect. Okay, so that brings us into our current guidelines. Okay, so 2008, the first edition, 150 minutes of moderate intensity or 75 minutes of vigorous. So what does that suggest? That suggests that 1 minute of vigorous is worth 2 minutes of moderate. So how many by the show of hands have done high intensity interval training? That's what we're talking about with vigorous exercise. So vigorous exercise is more efficient. The biggest barrier to physical activity is time. So our guidelines account for that. Our guidelines are supported by research. So 1 minute of really pushing yourself is worth 2 minutes of lesser intensity. 2007 is when we had the muscle strengthening guidelines appearing. That's also when the bouts had to be at least 10 minutes. Guess what? December 2008, the bouts no longer have to be 10 minutes. So what's the current message? Any activity is good for your health. Intermittent activity throughout the day. What does that mean? Rather than taking the elevator, you do what? You take the stairs. And that little bit of activity has benefits. It accumulates over time. So that's the current message. Accumulating bouts of activity throughout the day really makes a difference. Muscle strengthening is still there. 2 days a week. If you go to the Center for Disease Control website, you can read exactly what that means. There's very specific guidelines on what you can do those 2 days a week to get benefits, because it does matter, the product of that effort in the weight room does matter. So getting stronger is really important, as well as the process of doing the activity. I think the battery on my clicker is running out. Okay, so what if lifting weights is your thing? Here's a study that put aerobic fitness aside and just looked at strength. This particular study used the leg press and the bench press. So a lot of you have probably done those two lifts. Lower body strength, upper body strength, leg press, bench press. And they put those two together into an index of muscular strength. And they looked at mortality rate independent of aerobic fitness. Do you notice anything similar about that graph? It's exactly the same. So most of the benefit comes from not doing a whole lot in terms of muscular exercises to doing a little bit. Getting to a moderate level of strength. So no, you don't have to be an elite power lifter or a college thrower to get that health-related benefit. There is a little bit more there, but the best comes in from doing the activity, going from doing very little to doing something. So if lifting weights is your thing and you really don't like to be on the treadmill, you can still get these longevity benefits. So let's go back a little bit. Okay, so this was a recent study looking at, let me go back one more. There we go. Oh, right there. Okay. All right, so quintiles of physical activity. Quintile means five groups across different levels of strength. So looking at high strength, middle strength, and low strength. And within each of these strength groups, classifying how active people were. Q5 means you're really active. Q1 means not very active. So if you notice, let's take the low strength group, for example. This is cardiovascular disease. This is mortality over here. Very similar, if we look at the low strength group here and the low strength group here, with a low level of strength, as activity goes up, cardiovascular disease goes down. Mortality goes down. Same thing with the middle level of strength. As activity goes up, cardiovascular disease goes down. Okay, but let's compare activity groups across different levels of strength. So let's say someone with very low activity in the low strength group compared with somebody in the middle strength group with very low activity. Look at the difference. And then we go over here, the difference continues to drop. So what this says is both the activity and being strong are very important for our health. Here's another study looking at process versus product. Process is the behavior, product is the outcome. The product is very important. There's lots of different ways to lift weights. What this study says is we need to push ourselves a little bit. So we need to use an amount of weight that causes our muscles to fatigue. This shows meeting the muscle strengthening guidelines versus not. This is meeting the physical activity guidelines versus not, and this is achieving the 75th percentile for lower extremity strength versus not. This is the product over here. This is actually demonstrating strength versus behavior over here. So what this says is when we are training, we need to be following some type of program. Okay? So our outcome, the outcome of being stronger, is really important for our health. Should have used your clicker. Okay? All right, this comes from Finland. Finland has adopted our new guidelines. So this is kind of in a nutshell what the new guidelines are. 1 hour and 15 minutes a week of vigorous activity. Okay, so 75 minutes. Or we can choose 2 hours and 30 minutes, 150 minutes of moderate activity. And then the muscle strengthening and balance training in the middle twice per week. So this is kind of a global emphasis on everyone doing enough activity to be healthier. Right, so how are we doing in the United States? I was able to track these guidelines from the CDC. This is meeting the physical activity guidelines and the strengthening guidelines twice per week. And we've kind of flatlined as a nation. We're kind of maintaining, not dropping, but maintaining along. So about 20% of people meet both guidelines. Okay, our weight is climbing a little bit. Okay. So if our activity is flatlined and our weight is climbing, that probably means something on the nutritional end is increasing. So putting in more calories while maintaining your activity will produce weight gain. What's more concerning is our kids, our young adolescents, grades 9 through 12. Okay. Their guidelines are a little bit different than adults. Their guidelines involve achieving 1 hour or more of moderate and or vigorous physical activity daily. So a little bit different. Okay, this is our history. It's dropping just a little bit. Okay, but the weight trend among our youth is a little bit disturbing. It continues to, a little bit of a drop here. I'm not sure what happened here. Something positive, but it's continued to climb. Okay. So what is it about physical activity that protects our health? Well, we have a reduction in diabetes, hypertension, metabolic syndrome, okay, fibrinogen. Anybody know what that is, fibrinogen? Yeah, produces blood clots. Okay. C-reactive protein, okay, is a protein produced by our liver in response to inflammation, sometimes in our arteries, cancer and depression. So as I go through this, it's pretty much the same type of relationship. So back to the previous discussion of how much is enough to give me a moderate level of fitness. How many of you, by the show of hands, have ever had your cardiorespiratory fitness measured? Okay, so you know exactly in milliliters per kilogram per minute the VO2 that you have. And so 10 mets, this is in mets. Okay, so if we were to convert that to a VO2, right here, this would be considered 35 milliliters per kilogram per minute. That's the lower boundary. The upper boundary is about right here at 12. 12 mets would be about 42 milliliters per kilogram per minute. So that's moderate fitness. Between 35 and 42 is where you need to be for that moderate level of fitness. Everybody can achieve that. Going from low to where you're in that zone, 35 to 42 milliliters per kilogram per minute, is achievable by almost everybody. Okay, so looking at hypertension, development of hypertension, and you notice that same relationship. I was amazed as I went through all the research for this presentation that that same relationship comes up over and over again. Most of the benefit going from the low fitness category to the moderate fitness category. Okay, hypertension in men, kind of the same relationship. So looking at men with high cardiorespiratory fitness in the presence of high blood pressure versus low cardiorespiratory fitness in the presence of normal blood pressure, and it's about the same. That suggests physical activity is protective. Okay, same thing for metabolic syndrome. Just clicking through here, it's the same graph every single time. Okay, very similar. Fibrinogen, okay, produces blood clots. Okay, the percent fibrinogen is for someone with a lot of extra weight but high cardiorespiratory fitness, it's going to be lower versus someone of normal weight and low cardiorespiratory fitness. Okay, same thing for C-reactive protein. So as we go through here, cancer, exactly the same relationship. Physical activity is protective. What about depression? Okay, that's kind of a common thing. A lot of us have family members that really suffer from that, myself included. 180 minutes of activity per week, 26 minutes a day, and you see a 50% reduction, so remission of symptoms. Okay. Drug therapy produces about 40%. Okay, so physical activity has a mood elevating effect. Okay, so what's the total cost, direct and indirect? There was a recent study that actually quantified this. $67.5 billion a year in direct and indirect costs. 40% of the total is the United States. Okay, so this was a study that took several years to do. 93% of the world's population covered, and this is what we came out with. So just that simple daily choice to be a little bit more active can make a huge difference in our health. So lots of biological mechanisms. Lipid profile can improve your health through physical activity. Collateral circulation, so we're getting more blood vessels to perfuse all of the organs of the body. Fibrinolytic activity prevents blood clots. Blood pressure comes down, inflammatory markers come down. Vasodilation, our arteries are more relaxed. Autonomic balance, so we have more activity of our parasympathetic nervous system, so we're not overstressing our heart all the time. So our heart is not always in go mode. We're giving our heart a rest. And a bigger, stronger heart that pumps more blood per beat. Okay, so the biggest barrier, lack of time. What I really like about these current guidelines is the emphasis on vigorous physical activity. These really intense, intermittent bouts where we're working really hard a few times throughout the day can really add up and make a difference in our health. So if you don't have time to go to the gym, if you don't have time to stop on your way home from work or go to the gym before work, there's things you can do at home. How many have done wall sits? How many have done planks? Those little things can make a huge difference. So it really doesn't take a gym to be physically active, especially this time of year with the nice warmer weather. Get outside and enjoy nature. Go for a walk. Good for your health. Okay, so in summary, if we don't enjoy the hard intermittent exercise, then 30 minutes of moderate intensity physical activity per day. 30 minutes out of our day. First thing when you get up in the morning. Half hour. Additional health benefits with vigorous activity or with more time can make a huge difference. So with presentations like this and with the current public health emphasis, I hope we can somehow start with ourselves and work out from there in making a difference. I think with the type of culture we live in, you know, we need to change and get back to some of the things we used to do. Being more physically active on a daily basis is one of them. So thank you very much.